This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I'm Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I am Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for February 28th, 2011, episode 86, sponsored by Omega Alpha. Good morning, horse world.
Well, I hires on to this brand new ranch. It was owned by a bunch of fancy pants, but they did have several high-dollar trucks and trailers. Well, there was barns and pens, it was under construction, and I was informed by phone I'd receive my instruction in a video, arriving in a padded mailer. It said, sort the cows in pen 11, then bring us a tag so we can scan them, and I didn't have a clue, but I took a sack full of them to headquarters. There was a lady at a computer typing in numbers, and the more she typed, the more I felt dumber, and she said, yep, 501's too old, gotta go back and sort her. I replied, I ain't no cowhand, cowhand.com. I don't know where I just landed, scroll me back to where I'm from, cause I don't need no printout telling me that it's time to wean. Never seen a calf pulled by a machine, and this information highway keeps my pony sore and lean. I ain't no cowhand.com. Well, my security pass / photo ID opened the gate and picked out a horse for me, and you punch in a code and it start an automatic feeder. Of course, you still had to step over what them cows was downloading, and you did hair analysis with a digital modem, and put a cow up on the screen, it'd tell you which bull's gonna breed her. Well, then they give me this laptop from my saddlebags, and it got dusty out riding drag, and I knew the boss was gonna have my hide. Well, they said, just boot it up, open the windows, something about a mouse and a bunch of menus, so I hauled off and kicked it. I kept the windows closed because it was freezing outside. I ain't no cowhand, cowhand.com. I don't know where I just landed, scroll me back to where I'm from, because I don't need no printout telling me which stall to clean. Never seen a horse shod by a machine, and this information highway keeps my pony sore and lean. I ain't no cowhand.com. Well, then they start talking downsizing and linking up. I told them I was heading for the tall and the uncut. They could stick that Pentium right in their AOL. They was faxing emails and hazing the web, and they even had a megabyte RAM. That sounds inbred. I reckon those people wouldn't know the difference between a hard drive and a paper trail. I ain't no cowhand, cowhand.com. Don't need no information highway to get back to where I'm from. And I don't need no printout telling me which colt is green. Never seen a bronc broke by a machine. Besides, this little cell phone just don't fit good in my jeans. I ain't no cowhand.com. I ain't no http://, all one word, all little letters, www.cowhand.com. Yeah, that's what you get when you try to cross one of them computers with a cowboy.
Yeehaw! That is Dan Roberts, and we are so lucky to have Dan with us for the musical episode for this month. And a little background on Dan, I got to tell on him right now, because he's driving around in his diesel truck rounding up cattle as we speak. So if we lose him on the cell phone, it is for an honest to God cowboy moment. Okay. So if that's what happens, Dan, we understand. We'll just get you back on the phone. Now I got to introduce you because you have quite the resume. Dan has been a solo artist in Texas for the last 5 years, but his previous 18 years were spent in Nashville, Tennessee. He was a singer-songwriter, and he had numerous Billboard charts for one guy that you might have heard of. His name is Garth Brooks, and Dan toured with Garth, opened up for him, opened more Garth Brooks shows than any other opening act in Garth Brooks' long career. The man has been everywhere and done everything, including writing the song "The Beaches of Cheyenne," which, of course, as soon as I say the title, you get the line in your head, "The Beaches of Cheyenne." I'm not going to sing it because Dan's on the phone and I'll be embarrassed.
Good move.
Because we know, Glenn, that I do like to sing on the show, and yes. And it's embarrassing
it
to myself,
embarrassing. Trust
much
me, Dan.
Less with a real artist on the phone. So, Dan, first of all, thank you so much for being a part of Horses in the Morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on. That's quite an introduction. It puts a lot of pressure on me to live up to all that.
Oh, come on now. Well, you know, you've been in Texas for 5 years, and your previous careers were in Nashville, Tennessee. Of course, that's, you know, the home of country music, and you're a country music artist. But you also have a connection to us, which is why we have you on the show, because you're a horseman. You're a cowboy, a horseman. You have done everything. So I want to start, you know, just talk to us a little bit about your horse background before we get into the music.
Well, sure. Yeah, I love to visit about that. I need to set the record straight, though, for real horsemen that might happen to be listening. I am not one of them. those guys that are the real deal, I can't compare to that, but I do spend a lot of time in the saddle.
So I got to tell you, though, I've seen pictures of you riding bucking horses. I've seen pictures of you riding rearing horses and all sorts of stuff. So obviously, I've also seen pictures of you shoeing horses online. So tell us a little bit about where your horsey background came from.
Well, I will say along that line, I made a whole lot more money underneath them than I ever did on top of them.
That's true for most people, I think.
Yeah, there's a difference between getting on bucking horses and riding bucking horses. So my career in that rodeo world was short-lived, and I thought I better shoe them instead of ride them. I'll make more money. So anyway, I did. I shoed for about, I don't know, 6 or 7 years there while I was writing music in Nashville. I shoed full-time, so... But I got started, I guess, when we were real little. I wasn't raised on a ranch or anything. I was born and raised in Oregon, and we always lived in the country and had horses. So always, you know, had been on a horse, I guess, my whole life, and then I've had the opportunity to, you know, do a lot of ranch work. So I'm very, very blessed.
So you did grow up around horses, and obviously now you – did you grow up ranching? I mean, were you doing that kind of thing, or were you just riding trails, or when you were growing up?
No, just playing, you know, growing up. We lived in the country. The very first horse, I guess, I ever got, my uncle sent to me on a train from Spokane, Washington, down to Eugene, Oregon, and he gave him to me. And so that was the first horse I had. I think I was 8 or 9, maybe, and then... And then my family had a barbershop quartet, my dad and my two older brothers, Dave and Dean, and then myself, Dan. We were called the Mellow D's, Dad, Dave, Dean, and Dan. barbershop music all around Oregon, and, you know, grand openings of grocery stores and church and barbershop shows and stuff. So we came in 11th place one time in the barbershop show over in Coos Bay, Oregon, home of Steve Prefontaine. And we won $75 silver, and so Dad said that he would match us, and he gave us, kicked in 75, and so we actually bought our first horse that we owned that hadn't been given to us for $150.
Oh, wow.
And then we had two of them. So we just spent all our time horseback. We didn't have a saddle, didn't really know too much about it, and probably I don't have any idea what we might have put in their mouth, bridle-wise, hackamore or whatever we had, or rope halter. I don't know. We just kind of rode like Indians, and we'd take our BB guns and our 22s, and we'd take off. We lived backed up to a lot of land, and so we deer hunted up there, and we'd ride the river and cross the river, swim our horses. We just played. We had a lot of fun horseback. So
now what you really did was you got yourself one broke horse after doing all that.
Well, in retrospect, the little that we fed them, I don't think they were broke. I think they're just so malnourished that they you can do anything on them, you know?
They're just tired and hungry.
Oh, those poor things. I feel bad for them. There's no telling how bad we abused them. So.
I think a lot of us could say that, though, when we were kids, though, Dan. I mean, that's what you did. You didn't know anything. I mean, it was
No, we didn't. But hey, since the horse program, you'll be interested to know I'm literally right now driving by Chris Cox's place.
Oh, is that right? Well, we know what part of Texas you're in then.
Right here on Highway 281. I'm looking over there at his place off to the east.
You see the big trucks sitting out there? The big trucks?
Oh, yeah. Yep, sure do. I know Chris, and he's a good friend. But I guess if it's stop and see him, we could all get on the show together.
Well,
but
I gotta keep moving. Jamie and I have interviewed Chris before.
He's old news now. We're focusing on
we're going big time now. We got you on.
You want to talk to a horseman? Talk to him.
Now we know where you got your musical start too. It was the same time you really got started in ponies. You got started. You were singing with the family.
Yeah, we really did. Dad had sung barbershop music in World War II. He was on a submarine tender, a boat that resupplies submarines in World War II, and he somehow or another got hooked up with a bunch of guys that sang barbershop stuff, so he got in a barbershop chorus. I think they went to the Nationals. I don't remember what they did or what he told us that they did, but they anyway went to the Nationals in New York and all that, so he had a real interest in it, and he and Mom, when they started their family, had three boys back to back, and then a daughter, and so anyway, my dad decided he wanted the barbershop quartet. I'm very thankful he did that, because we learned to sing harmony, and that family harmony is something that's difficult to duplicate.
Well, you know, and first of all, how they could keep three boys in line from beating each other up, standing next to each other singing.
We're not going to talk about that today.
Well,
horsing around, if you want to talk horsing, we did a lot of that.
Yeah, I am sure.
I grew up with three brothers, too. I know how that is.
Oh, Lord. Oh, the two of you. Yeah, you didn't have to sing in line with yours, though, probably.
No, we pretty much just spent our time beating each other up.
Yeah. Well, I want to play one of your songs. Obviously, I want to kickstart this show with The Beaches of Cheyenne. Of course, you co-wrote this with Garth Brooks. And tell us a little bit about that process, and then we're going to play it.
Sure. And Brian Kennedy was the other writer on that show, or on that song, excuse me. Well, actually, the idea came from Garth. He had cut a song called The Fever, kind of a rock and roll bull riding type of song. That Aerosmith had a song called Fever, and Garth asked Brian and I, we wrote it, the three of us just buddied around together and knew Garth before he ever had a record deal, you know, so we were just kind of friends and fellow struggling songwriters. He didn't struggle long, but he did early on. And so anyway, he asked Brian and I to say, hey, I'd like to see if you can put a bull riding lyric to the song Fever, and so we gave it our best effort, and then Garth got involved and helped us get it over the finish line, and we wrote that, and then he sent it off to Aerosmith and asked them if it was okay to, you know, copy their song. So he actually made them writers on it too. It's Steven Tyler, Joe Perry, Brian Kennedy, and myself, and Garth, being the unselfish person that he is, didn't put his name on it. But so anyway, he invited me to the studio to hear that cut, and so I went down there and listened to it and just hung out, ate pizza and putted golf balls across the rug, and that's what you do in the studio in Nashville, I guess. But, I was leaving, and he was walking me out to my truck, and he said, man, I'm still, he was writing songs as he was making the album, and he said, I'm still needing a song, kind of a, you know, Chris LeDoux meets Jimmy Buffett or the Bellamy Brothers, George Strait, you know, kind of a Cowboys, Beaches. He's just talking out loud, and he says, like, Beaches of Cheyenne, and putting together the, you know, the beach, and then, of course, Cheyenne, the granddaddy of them all, rodeo.
Right.
And so we both, we're walking over to my truck, and we both kind of stopped, gave me goosebumps, and he got goosebumps. I did it just now. I got goosebumps on my arm.
Oh, me too.
And I said, wow, that's an interesting title, you know, and neither one of us really knew what it where it was going, and so we got together with Brian, and we tried to write it like that. We tried to write it as a real upbeat party, kind of follow-up to Friends in Low Places type of song, and just couldn't get it going. And we were thinking about it being about a man walking the, you know, living in California, and he has got a wife and kids, and dreamed of rodeoing, but, you know, it wasn't ever going to happen for him just because that wasn't his life. So he'd walk the beaches and think about Cheyenne, and that wasn't really going anywhere either. And but Garth had the guitar. You know, when you're writing or co-writing, if somebody's kind of on it with the melody, at least I do, I don't even get my guitar out of the case. You know, if they got it going, if they're struggling or stuck or something, maybe if somebody else will pick the guitar up. But so he had a little bit of the melody. Every night he walks the beaches of Cheyenne, thinking about that guy. And then a guy that worked for Garth came up to where we were writing, up at the house there, and he said, hey, there's a pipe broke in the barn, and flooding the stalls, and the horses are standing in ankle-deep water and shavings and stuff. And so we hopped in his Kawasaki mule, and we were driving down to the barn to take care of that little deal, and we're still in the writing mode, and Garth sings out loud, every night she walks the beaches of Cheyenne, and we go, oh, maybe this isn't about a guy, maybe this is about a girl, you know, because when you got a blank piece of paper in front of you, you're trying to write something, you know, you just, it's like pushing a rope sometimes,
right,
I think,
right,
so.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then that's where it all took off from there. And then the story about, you know, what happened and him drawing a bull and nobody could ride and promised to return out and didn't, and, you know, got killed and the whole deal. So anyway, that's basically how that came about.
Packed up all his buckles, shipped his saddle to his dad. And by the way the house looked, she must have took it bad. The workers come on Monday to fix the door and patch the walls. They say she just went crazy the night she got the call. He was up in Wyoming, drew a bull no man could ride. He promised her he'd turn out, well it turned out that he lied. And all the dreams that they'd been living in the California sand died right there beside him in Cheyenne. They say she just went crazy, screaming out his name. She ran out into the ocean, and to this day they claim that you can go down by the water and see her footprints in the sand. 'Cause every night she walks the beaches of Cheyenne. Thank you. They never found her body, just her diary by the bed. Told about the fight they'd had and the words that she had said. When he told her he was riding, she said that I don't give a damn if you never come back from Cheyenne. They say she just went crazy, screaming out his name. She ran out into the ocean, and to this day they claim that if you go down by the water, you'll see her footprints in the sand. 'Cause every night she walks the beaches of Cheyenne. Nobody can explain it. Some say she's still alive. They even claim they've seen her on the shoreline late at night. And if you go down by the water, you'll see her footprints in the sand. 'Cause every night she walks the beaches of Cheyenne. Every night she walks the beaches of Cheyenne.
Dan Roberts, and he wrote that song with Brian Kennedy and one Garth Brooks. So thanks for letting us play that. And I do have to do a commercial here, Dan, before we get back to some more music. But man, what a great song.
All right.
Anyway, Omega Alpha Pharmaceuticals creates only natural health products. This show today is brought to you by Omega Alpha. Their scientists, guided by Dr. Gordon Chang, formulate a wide variety of mainly herbal health products to address many equine health problems. And, you know, I've had my horse on Biotic 8, and I certainly know that Glenn's horse and Jennifer's horse, Beaker, is on some Omega Alpha products.
That's right. So
We are definitely believers.
Oh, listen to that.
Yes, that was awesome.
I'm sorry.
That's perfect timing.
That's fantastic. It even keeps cows happy. See, cows love Omega Alpha. Well, listen, they bring consumers a perfect marriage of nature and science and cattle. Look for their products at retailers nationwide and visit their website at omegaalpha.ca. Wow. That's the best commercial ever, Dan. Thank you so much.
That's the first time we've ever had cows in a commercial. I can say that.
The real deal, huh?
Yeah. In 900 episodes, we've never had a cow in a commercial.
Well, when we shipped these yearlings yesterday, a couple of them escaped, and so trying to get them back up, but I'll get back in the truck so we can hear.
That's
Let's play another song, Glenn, while he's getting everything wrapped up, I guess.
Are you okay, Dan? You're okay?
I'm good.
All right, good. Well, you know, we ask all the musicians that we have on these special episodes for Horses in the Morning. We ask the musicians, with Beaches of Cheyenne, it was the name first, but is it always that way, or do you do the music first? Do you do the lyrics first? How do you write?
Well, that's a great question, and for me, it's generally an idea first before the melody. So, but sometimes, you know, you get a little melody, a little groove kind of thing going, and you go, hey, I'm going to try to make up, you know, just a little line or something that will get you going. But typically, it's an idea or what they call a hook, you know.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And what, you know, you've done a number of albums now, a number of CDs, and you've done a wide variety, too. I mean, you do have a style of your own, but some of the songs go a little bit more southern rock, and some go really, really old country. And then you actually did a gospel CD, too.
Yeah. Two reasons for that. One, I hadn't come out with anything for a long time, and I needed to come out with something, and I didn't have any original material that I had written. It was along the time when my daughter was ill, and so just didn't have any new stuff. And then the other thing, this is something I'd always wanted to do, so I thought, well, good timing.
Well, and I wanted to ask you, too, I want to get back a little bit to your time. You spent 2 years as opening act for Garth. What was that like on the road?
Well, it was awesome. I wouldn't want to do it again, no offense to Garth or any of the guys and girls I was out with. It was at a time in my life with my family that it was manageable, even though it was difficult for my wife with three kids. For me to be on the road, at least it was, they were real, real young and not involved in all kinds of stuff like they are now, you know, playing volleyball and roping and rodeoing and, you know, I got three teenagers right now, so life's never been busier. It would be a hard time to be gone.
Right. But did you have to pinch yourself the first time you were in a mega stadium with 40,000 people around singing in front of that? Did you have to pinch yourself a little bit?
You know, I don't think I would have felt it because I was pretty numb anyway. So it was pretty wild. The very first show we did was at the Omni in Atlanta, which has now been imploded.
Yep.
And I was so nervous that, you know, my mouth was dry and, and, you know, I mean, it was just kind of a blur. It really was. Although I do remember the very first night we had a fake campfire that Brian and I sang around, just kind of singing cowboy songs and whatnot. Garth, you know, he doesn't need an opening act. I mean, our name wasn't on the ticket. And, you know, nobody was buying a ticket other than my family to come and see me play. And,
maybe.
So, maybe, exactly. So, what was this? Oh, yeah, about the Omni. So, anyway, we had a little, he asked Brian Kennedy and I, we were just his songwriting buddies and buddies in general, you know, we just hung out together, as I said, before he ever had a record deal. So he said, hey, why don't you guys come on the road and open my shows and you sing cowboy songs and we'll make a little fake campfire and you just sing for, you know, 20, 25 minutes and what do you think? I mean, it was that casual. There was no contract or, you know, nothing, just friends.
Huh.
And so we said, are you kidding me? And he said, yeah, no, let's do it. So we're like, well, okay. I called my wife, and it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, I guess, when he asked us to do that. And we were sitting around the campfire up at his place, and I was driving home, and I called my sweet wife, who, of course, was sleeping like most people are at that time of the day. And I said, put a pot of coffee on. We got to visit. I'll be home in an hour. So we talked it over, and she agreed to let me go, and off we went. So at the Omni, our little campfire had a parachute type of material over it so that you couldn't see it until just the right moment. They pulled the little parachute cover off it, you know, and then the light, it lit up and the little tinfoil and the fake logs and rocks and all that stuff. Well, when the guy, very first night, when he pulled it off, pulled the cover off, it knocked my microphone over, which was right next to the campfire and the microphone stand. And it was hot. It was on. So it was
a
great, great big,
boom.
You know, vibrating boom, you know, kind of thing. And so 18,000 people or something there. And I said to the guy that did it, I said, hey, don't worry about it. I'll get it when I get up there. And I was trying to be real cool and calm and collected, which I wasn't, but I was trying to pretend like I was. And so I jump up there and they introduce me. I take my hat off, you know, and hey, you know, say hello to everybody, and I reach down to grab the microphone, and I get it up to about my waist, and I didn't realize I was standing on the cord with my other foot, and so when I pulled it up, it just pulled it out of my hand and hit again, boom, big old, and as if I didn't need another thing to make me, to rattle me more than I already was rattled, you know? So anyway, we snuck by that episode somehow or another, and after we did 4 or 5 shows down there like Garth did most places he went, and so he came in our dressing room after the time in Atlanta, and he said, well, you guys want to go to Cleveland? And we're like, yeah. We didn't know if you'd want us to, but we're game, you know. So I think we're on a probation for about 6 months, and then he forgot about us. Things were going so good, he just didn't didn't I?
Wow.
So anyway, we did 2 years.
Well, how hard is that to be the opening act? You know, everybody is there to see them, and it's kind of like, okay, we want Garth. You know, they're all dying to see him. So, how hard is that? You know, is it really tough?
Well, no, you just said it right then when you said it. What we did was we started them chanting before we didn't sing long enough for them to get tired of us, and then we'd go, "We want Garth." And then they start chanting, we just leave. And so it worked out good.
I love it. You know, I got to tell you, doing all the years in Atlanta and country music, and first of all, thank God the Omni's gone. That place was horrible. And so was the basketball by the Hawks that were played in that stadium. But, you know, as much as I've heard about Garth Brooks, that would be the exact way that he would do it. Hey, y'all want to go to Cleveland?
Yeah.
I mean, no contracts, no nothing. Hey, here's my people are going to handle the business with you. It's just you're with me. And I've definitely heard that about him, and that he's great like that. And
yeah, he's a handshake kind of guy. His word is bond, and that's all there is to it. You know, if you see him do it.
Well, absolutely.
I want to play one more song, and because we are a horse show, before we get into something, if you're willing to talk about Refuse to Lose, I want to talk about that before we end the show today.
I'd love to.
Good. All right. But there's a song, of course, you know, we're a horse show, so we got to talk about Can't Change Horses. Where did that come from?
Good question. You asked me about how does a song get written. That was just an idea Brian Kennedy had. He called me up one day and he said, "Hey, let's write a rodeo album." Every Friday I was working construction, shoeing horses and stuff, and so I'd take Friday afternoons off and go in there and we wrote a bunch of rodeo songs, and that was one of the titles that Brian had, Can't Change Horses in the Middle of Your Dream, and so we just took off on it and started writing, and I guess what you're going to play is what we ended up with.
Better look down that road before you get on. Turn around, take one last look behind. Hey, pick up a little dirt, run it through your hands, then carve your favorite memories in your mind. 'Cause all you've ever dreamed of was riding the rodeo. Before you learn to hold on, you gotta learn. Your time in the saddle ain't as rough as life in between, and the fence isn't there for you to straddle, and you can't change horses in the middle of your dream. Just soon be gone, but take time, study your back trail. 'Cause what you've learned today may help tomorrow, but leaving's the only way to tell. Well, you can't put a price tag on the fun and rodeo, but you don't get a free ride, you'll pay as you go. You gotta learn that your time in the saddle ain't as rough as a life in between, and the fence isn't there for you to straddle, and you can't change horses in the middle of your dream. Hey, you gotta learn that your time in the saddle ain't as rough. Isn't there for you to
Can't change horses, and I can hear you're out there working with the cows again, and that's good. We're gonna get to talking about Refuse to Lose. This is funny. I'm enjoying this. The song is brought to you by.
This is awesome.
I'm sorry. I was hoping the song would go a little longer.
That song is brought to you by Pocket Stable. Pocket Stable is the only iPhone app that's been created for horse owners who want to keep all their information, including vaccines, worming, farrier, dentist visits, together and easily accessible right on your iPhone. You can also track weight and get reminders of important events like vaccines, worming, and farrier visits. Find Pocket Stable in App Store or in the App Store on your iPhone, or visit them at pocketstable.com. Well, now I want to talk about Refuse to Lose, because we could not have you on here and not talk about your daughter Austin and what came about and the amazing thing that you did. So can you give us sort of the Reader's Digest version of that, and what a story?
Sure. Reader's Digest version, when we moved to Texas in 11 years ago, I guess 2000, Austin was 6 at the time, and she was diagnosed with a massive right parietal lobe brain tumor. So we rushed her into emergency surgery, and they removed the tumor, but they didn't get it all, and she suffered with some seizures for a couple of years, and then the tumor came back, and she came out of remission, so we had to have her operated on again. And this time, our surgeon told us that he could get the tumor, but he would have to take such large margins on the tumor that it would leave her paralyzed on the left side and lose her language skills and just lots of complications. And we said, is there anything else that can be done? And he said that there was some technology available at some other medical centers, one of which was UCLA. And I said, I know a neurosurgeon at UCLA. From a singing gig that I'd had out in California, and he asked me who it was, and I said, his name's Donald Becker, and he looked at me like I had just said, you know, I don't know what.
Garth Brooks.
John Wayne, yeah, Ronald Reagan, whatever. And he said, man, he's the pioneer of this technology. He said, and so I called him, and he agreed to see Austin. We took her out to UCLA, and he operated on her using that technology, and the long story short, she's 17 years old and is a setter on her club volleyball team and just a beautiful young high school athlete.
Wow.
And has not had any deficits, or has no deficits, and hadn't had any complications, didn't have any chemo, radiation, nothing. She totally healed from that. The good Lord ultimately, but also with that technology and with the gifted hands of Dr. Becker and the medical staff here at Cook Children's in Fort Worth. So we were just so moved by the fact that our daughter had been given back to us. But we said, we got to get that technology here. What happens to the next family that goes in there that you know, doesn't know Dr. Becker in California, you know?
Right.
Right.
And so we went to the hospital and said we would like to, you know, help raise the money to get that technology here. And they agreed to partner with us to do the construction if we could raise the money. And so we started.
Now, wait a minute. But tell them how much the money was.
Well, it started out at $3 million, and we thought, well, that's a lot, but we, you know, if the Lord's in it, we can do it. So
I know, but you guys went in there and you said, and they said $3 million, and you went, well, let's just do it. I mean, there's not many people that would do that. I mean,
that don't have enough brains, I guess. So anyway, but then it moved to $4.5 million, but we were already, you know, kind of committed to it.
Once you're at three, what's four and a half?
Yeah,
know?
Really?
Yeah.
So, you know, and I mean, it's just my wife and I. It's not like we had an organization or anything. We had a lot of people that were certainly contributed to it and gave to it, and you know, generously. But it's a long ways to go from even, you know, to get $100,000 in and think, okay, $4.5 million, you know.
Yeah.
And I just said to my wife one night, I said, you know, I wonder if I ask Garth to come out of retirement. Just one night, come to the Bass Hall in Fort Worth, beautiful performing arts building, one of the finest ones in the world, holds 2,000 people, and just state-of-the-art, and awesome place to hear, to see an entertainer. foreplay or ballet or whatever. So anyway, I called him and I told him what we wanted to do. And I said, we want to sell the tickets for $1,000 a seat, 2,000 seats. It'd be $2 million in one night. And he agreed to do it. He said, I'll do it, but you can't use my name. And so that made it a little tough.
Yeah, how do you sell tickets if you don't know he's there?
Well, you know what? They made a program with a kind of silhouette of Garth on it. I mean, you couldn't, you know, just a silhouette, just black and white deal with the microphone. I mean, it was obvious that it was Garth. And it said an acoustical evening with Dan Roberts and friends or something like that. And it was obvious who it was. And so I sent it to him, faxed it to him, and said, okay, not using your name, but here's what they want to use for the program. Are you okay with it? And he said, yeah, go for it. So he knew, you know, just the same as using his name, but he's such a great guy. And he said, I'm doing this for Austin. And I said, okay. And, you're going to make me start crying.
Me too.
Kids do me sometimes. But, you know, we raised our kids together. I mean, we changed each other's kids' diapers. You know, they're all the same age, all three of them. And you know, we spent a lot of time with them. So he loves Austin and she loves him. So anyway, he came down here and actually we're at 1.85 million seats sold when he got here. But the place was still filled up because a lot of people bought, you know, $100,000 donation and only two of them were coming. So it really worked out great. We had a lottery for the staff at the hospital. They just kind of put their name in the lottery and got a ticket for nothing. And we gave them to firefighters and other people that had contributed to the Refuse to Lose Fund along the way, you know, and it was just, it was a beautiful evening. So when he got here, he said, okay, where are we at? And I said, 1.85 million. So he didn't say anything. He just said, okay, good. And so at the end of the show, he said, you know, Robert, you're trying to raise $2 million tonight. And when the evening began, they had 1.85 million. And the good news is a late donor came in and they got their 2 million. And I was sitting side stage with Steve Warner and Stephanie Davis. And I turned to him, I said, there's no late donor. And they both said, Garth.
Yeah.
So he sent a check to get it to the 2 million. And then of course, you know, as I learned, raising money in a deal like that, when it gets that kind of momentum, you know, then other people just seem to jump on and the money poured in and we got it. And I think 16 months, it raised $4.5 million and it's in the hospital now. It's up and running. It's been there since 07, so 4 years.
Well, and that has to be, you know, all those children being saved now, has to be a legacy. That has to be the highlight of your life right there, what you're doing for those other kids.
You know, I don't know anything that I'll ever be a part of that will be any more gratifying than that. I can't imagine.
Dan, you're just, oh my gosh, I'm just a puddle over here. Because I got it.
It's a good thing I'm not there. You and I'd be crying on each other's shoulders. So.
But see, I got to tell you, and Glenn doesn't know this, but Cook's Children's in Fort Worth, Texas saved my cousin's daughter too. And she's now riding reining horses and learning how to ride. She was definitely that family. I've been to that hospital to visit her and, you know, childhood youth diabetes and the whole mess. And that's such a great organization. And that's such an amazing place to take a child who was terrified of her disease and to leave excited about it. I mean, excited about learning about it and being able to handle it. And the Cook's Children's is just a phenomenal organization, a phenomenal place, and such a great benefactor. And I can't thank you enough for what you did to, you know, help that. And my gosh, you know, not many people can call up Garth Brooks and ask for help. So, you know, bless his heart for jumping in there and doing it. And you just, I'm just a mess. I'm done. I can't even talk anymore. Woo, you got me.
I'm done with you.
Well, guys, I think this is actually a good point to be done.
Can't top that. We better just stop here and have a do this again sometime.
I do want to say that your music can be bought. Tell everybody where they can buy your music.
Well, it's on Amazon.com and CD Baby and, of course, iTunes and stuff like that. But our website also, they can order it. It's Dan Robert, or it's, yeah, Dan Roberts at oldbootsmusic.com.
Yeah, oldbootsmusic.com will get you there. I actually just went onto iTunes, put in Dan Roberts, and found all of your CDs and downloaded them from there. Yeah, they were all there, so that was good. And of
My
course,
kids
they can,
told me that you can do that. I hadn't tried that.
Well, you can buy them by the album or by the song or however you want to do it, so it's kind of cool. And is refusetolose.org still there, too?
Yes, it is. It's still it's under the umbrella of the Neurological Foundation there at Cook Children's Medical Center, but people do still donate to Refuse to Lose. And so even though this technology is here, you know, there's numerous expenses. Yeah. There's software. It's more technical than I can even understand, let alone explain. But yes, there's still needs there. You bet.
Okay, good. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us today. We appreciate you joining us on our monthly musical episodes. Thank you so much to Dan Roberts for being here. You can listen to all of our shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. And Jamie and I will be back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern live. We'll be back live tomorrow for a regular show here on Horses in the Morning.
Maybe.
Thank you so much, Dan. Maybe if Jamie's emotions are back by then. We're going to play a song out of the show today of Dan's that you asked for. And that, talk about larger than life and the things we were just talking about. Nobody epitomizes that better than John Wayne. So you have a song that you did called I Miss John Wayne. And I think that's just going to be the perfect way to play it out, Dan.
Well, good. I'll dry my eyes and get out of the truck so these cowboys don't see me crying while you're playing about the toughest man that ever lived.
I've been looking for something that's missing in our world, and I wonder if my search is all in vain. Where's the good guys? Where's the bad guys? Where has law and justice gone? Lord, how I miss John Wayne. Alone in the saddle with guns blazing in each hand, with true grit in his teeth he held the reins. He charged hard into battle where a lesser man he would have run. Lord, how I miss John Wayne. He never backed down from a job that he had to do, and he could cross the line from talking with a clenched fist attitude. He knew right was right, wrong was wrong, but today they seem the same. Oh Lord, how I miss John Wayne. Never thought I'd see the day, but his time has
has come and gone. And now a man's man, he's looked upon with shame. What we're needing in this world today is men with the guts to back up what they say. Lord, how I miss John Wayne. He never backed down from a job that he had to do, and he could cross the line from talking with a clenched fist attitude. He knew right was right and wrong was wrong, but today they seem the same. Oh Lord, how I miss John Wayne. Well, there have been a lot of cowboys who have come and gone. Men like Gene Autry, Roy Rogers, Johnny Mack Brown, Tex Ritter, Bob Wills and his Texas Playboys, Jimmy Stewart, Bob Nolan, Cisco Kid, Tom Mix, Buck Jones, old Walter Brennan, Bob Steele, Ray Reed, Bob Crosby, Hopalong Cassidy, Gabby Hayes, Ben Johnson, of course old Louie L'Amour. They're all cowboy heroes, and in many ways, they're the same. But Lord, how I miss John Wayne.